Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hang on to your balls. It's time for the Horror Hangout Podcast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout Podcast, where two bearded film fans watch the 50 best horror movies ever and then talk about them. My name is Luke Condo with Kate, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
Ben Errington.
And we've also got back on the show Mr. Spreadsheets himself, Mr. Andy Conduit Turn. How's it going?
Yeah, hey guys, I'm real good, thanks.
So, Andy, so what has been your favourite horror movie this year, and why is it Hereditary?
Oh, well...
There if you like it. Like, I don't know if there, you have actually seen it or not. Yet.
There almost feels like there's a forced and correct answer there. But no, I haven't seen Hereditary yet, but okay. I was very impatient, so I listened to your episode the other week to sort of spoil it. Well, to entirely spoil it for myself.
Yeah.
But I am still going to go and pull a surprised face. I ended up listening to the episode about it because having seen the trailer, my wife was not up for going. It looks too horrible. So we went and saw Jurassic World, which was fine.
Yeah. Ben, you were telling me that you've not stopped thinking about it. Is that still
I've
the case?
I've not stopped thinking about it. I've not slept. I've not eaten. I'm just shaking as every spoonful of food comes towards my mouth. No, I've been reading up on it a lot, watching a lot of videos, thinking about it a lot, listening to the soundtrack. Mm. And the more I do that, the more I kind of think it's probably one of my favorites of the year so far. And even though I gave it a B+, maybe a B+. I mean, I could.
Yeah.
I've still more of a think about it. I could even bump that up to an A. I quite like the fact
that. Too late for that.
Audience, yeah, it's too late, mate. It's already
written down now. You both gave it a B+.
Yeah.
I think that was pretty good. I'd stick with a B+. It's it's stationary in my view. Yeah.
So for you, Ben, the hype wave is getting bigger.
Yeah,
still building.
Yeah, I quite like it. The audiences aren't really digging it as well. I like that. It makes me feel like that. You guys,
you don't get it.
On.
You don't understand.
Yeah, just don't.
You just don't get it.
Yeah, like a few people I know have kind of seen it and they've gone, "Oh, it's rubbish, isn't it?" And I go, "Well, I don't think it was actually." And they go, "What?"
I've
had similar. I think my some relatives went and saw it, and what did you think? I've heard it's really good. They're like, "Nah, rubbish."
It's weird, isn't it? I kind of feel like it's great for people who appreciate horror cinema, rather than The Conjuring and those sort of scare rollercoaster films.
I
still think it's got those elements as well. So I don't understand quite the hate, but.
Yeah. I think there are a few different breeds of horror fan, aren't there? Well, probably absolutely loads. But I think now, if you could probably split it down the middle now in terms of horror fans.
Cat people. You've got people.
Cat people.
Yeah.
You got cat people.
And not cat people.
You basically got people who enjoy jump scared. Dog people.
Yeah.
You basically got people who enjoy jump scares and people who enjoy genuine, creepy atmosphere. And it's kind of like people are kind of split into those sort of two camps where unless there's something literally going rah in your face and making you kind of shit your pants, then they don't consider it a real horror, but something that's proper creepy, Hereditary with creepy atmosphere and kind of like slowly builds.
I like those jump scares where someone opens a cupboard and a cat jumps out, or a cat peep
out. Like a fake out.
Yeah,
it's like the cat three or four times. You give me an idea though, Ben, with all this different types of horror. Mm. Maybe one of these days I'll graduate from spreadsheets and I'll do a Venn diagram. Put the little logos in each of the little bits. Time.
Yeah.
That's going to be an infographic and a half. Hold that thought.
God.
Mr. Sheets is evolving.
We'll have to do a whole episode on it. It's basically like in School of Rock. Do you remember when he's writing down the history of rock on the chalkboard and he's got all the arrows coming off of all that prog, all this stuff? Basically it's like that, but for horror films.
We'll do one of those. Maybe that can be after the list finish. Maybe we'll do a live show, fill up an auditorium. We'll get a whiteboard, laser pointers. What a time.
And here we have 0.5 of horror jump scares, number 10. Just go for this. So before we get into the film of the week, we need to pop out a couple of guffs. So, Andy, do you want to do the honours?
Oh, in terms of horror this week, guff wise, it's been sparse apart from Halloween.
The guffage has been sparse.
Yeah, it's been obviously not getting enough horror fibre. we saw Jurassic World the other day, which I'd say at least the second half of it at least attempts to have a more of a horror atmosphere about it. Perhaps that mainstream jump scares and, you know, there are monsters in the dark kind of way. But other than that, it's been not too much else on the horror region.
It did kind of like try and recapture some of the, because there's a hell of a lot of the first film is horror oriented. Yeah. So at least it tried to capture that in places.
There was almost a recreation of some of the bits in the kitchen of the first one, of original Jurassic Park, with the girl and the dumbwaiter as well. I think there's obviously a lot of love for the originals in there.
Yeah, of course, I recognise that too. But there were a lot of scenes that kind of like felt almost like carbon copies of scenes from previous installments. Not necessarily a good way, like sometimes obviously good to pay homage, but this kind of felt a little bit like, well, we've seen this before. It suffered from a bit of an identity crisis, I think, the film.
Yeah, it's almost a film of two halves. And saying that, I did really enjoy it. There were some really good moments in it, but I think of the whole film, if you just want a real good slice of it, like the opening unconnected section is probably a really good standalone bit to watch.
It's great. 100%, yeah.
I'd have been on board for a lot more of that.
And that was really tense, and that was really sort of quite terrifying. I found there were moments where I had a bit goosebumps a couple of times. Whoa, that's a bit. Yeah, I think it's because it was like it felt classic Jurassic Park because it was in the rain, people were wearing like yellow Macs. It just kind of felt right. But yeah, kind of.
I mean, I don't know where they're going to take it next, but to be fair, it's going to have dinosaurs in it, so I'll probably go see it.
I reckon just do like a Dino Riders film where people ride on the back of dinosaurs, and you know what, they're used in wars and all this shit. It seems like that's the way it's going to go.
Just ridiculous, dinosaur but... Planet of the Apes.
Yeah,
there could be like a post-apocalyptic style Dino Riders sort of thing. But are they going to do a trilogy? Is that the plan? Or are they going to keep going?
I expect so. I mean, if it's been making a decent little bit of bunts, then I guess they'll keep going. Keep going till everyone's dead.
Talking about keeping going. What about you, Ben? Have you done a guff?
Keeping them going. No, I'm kind of similar.
Yeah,
it's been one of those weeks where I've not consumed much, not just horror fiber, but any sort of real entertainment. Been watching a lot of football. That's kind of been ruling my life. I mean, that's not a great excuse, but you know, it's once every 4 years.
Talk about Germany's horror show today.
Talk about today? Germany's horror show. Yeah, it was today. It was
topical.
topical. It was today. So yeah, that was. That was wonderful. The last time Germany exited the World Cup before England was in 1966. So what does that tell you?
Oh, don't get expectations,
football,
Ben.
Is football coming home, Ben? I've heard
football
people say that.
It's definitely on its way home.
Right.
It's definitely set off.
Set at the airport.
It's definitely put the sat-nav coordination. It's put the postcode in.
Yeah.
It's on its way back. So yeah, I've kind of been ruled by that, and it's been fun. I've been enjoying it.
Mm.
So sorry, no. But what about you, Luke?
I've watched a few things. I mean, the thing that's sort of mainly horror based, I guess, is Battle Royale. Rewatched that. That was like one of my sort of university films. Like, it was that and Requiem for a Dream. Films I had on DVD that I just put on.
You made it in university?
I made it, you know.
Whoa.
on a weekend. Yeah. Well, you know, you've got to use the loans for something. Yeah. It's like, I don't think I'd call it horror. It's like dystopian horror, isn't it, I guess? But it's still holds up. It's still like a really great, like, just dystopian school kids killing each other sort of film.
Yeah, like, it's a great, great movie.
It's better than Hunger Games, isn't it?
Yeah, I saw a quote. Someone said Suzanne Collins was inspired by the war in somewhere to write the Hunger Games, and I was like, well, there's probably something to do with Battle Royale as well.
About the Battle Royale comparison. I remember when it came out, I was like, what is this? Because I obviously never heard of the Hunger Games because it was a new thing. But I read afterwards that when all the claims that it was a, you know, Battle Royale ripoff came out, that she did make a statement, I believe, saying, oh no, I'd never read it or heard of it. And after the all this came out, people comparing them very strongly, she offered to read it so she could put the second and third books more different from it. But her publisher said, nah, mate, because then you might be subtly influenced, so it's better not to read this thing that you're accidentally very similar to.
Yeah, but now there's like the game sort of, there's like PUBG and
Fortnite. Everything's Battle Royale based.
Everything's Battle Royale now.
How many Battle Royale films were there? Because there was definitely a second.
There's a second one. That isn't anywhere near as good, because
it loses the entire conceit of the first film, which makes it so good. The second one, yeah. I remember just being just a war, like a story about like guerrilla warfare or something with like kids and teenagers.
I think the second one is troubled because I forget the guy's name, but the director that was like a super legendary film director who was directing films into his very old age, like, died about halfway through. Someone else finished it. So it's a bit of a confused story.
Yeah. It's a long time since I've seen it. But Battle Royale, the first one, like, it's one of those films that if you haven't seen it, then you might accidentally do a Suzanne Collins. You might accidentally rewrite it. So you better watch it.
What?
Yeah, you better watch it now.
Otherwise, your publisher won't let you afterwards.
Exactly, yeah, I mean, you miss out.
If that's the rule, just make sure you get all the films watched before you make anything.
Yeah,
basically, exactly. Don't write anything. Yeah. Don't make a film until you've watched all the films, and then you know you're not gonna have it. There's not gonna be a chance that you completely.
There has been a couple times that I've gone to write something and I thought, someone has to have done this before, so I just didn't write it. But you never know. You might have been something completely original, but.
Yeah. I always find crossovers really, you know, sort of really strange crossovers you see sometimes. I remember once, and I forget the episode, that my dad is super into Doctor Who, and he was watching this Doctor Who episode, and they did something to save the day. And I was like, isn't that like a Dragon Ball Z storyline? Oh, that's it, where everyone thought about him on a day and give them his energy. And I was that's how Goku beats everyone.
That's how he grows his spirit bomb. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone has to put their hands up or something.
Yeah. Give him a bit of energy, and that's how he wins.
Mexican wave. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also watched a film called Basket Case, which is a Frank Henenlotter film. Have you ever heard of it? Do you know much about it?
Yes, I have. I haven't watched it, but I know it's the one with the twin brother who's in a basket, right?
Yeah.
And he's a boglin instead of a man.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he's a boglin, exactly right, yeah. So he's such a weird, it's obviously very low budget, filmed on set in like a hotel in New York. It sort of captures sort of New York really quite well, but so it's about a Siamese twin, and his brother's been cut off him. He's like a little wart, overgrown wart with arms and a face. But he looks so not alive. So when this thing starts like jumping on people, there's a lot of acting where people are holding onto the thing attacking it, and they just sort of swing it around the room. But it's pretty fun, I think. And I think it's a bit of a cult film. I think there's a lot of people at a certain time, maybe in the 80s or something, they watched this and it was there.
Yeah.
One of the things that we watch over and over again. But I definitely recommend it. It's on Shudder. The first three films are on Shudder.
As I said, there are a couple, aren't there? There's a couple of Basket Case movies.
I looked at the poster for the second one, and there was like Belial, who's the little growth thing.
Boglin man.
And then there's other people with like curious shaped faces and stuff. And it looked like it was a bit of a team up sort of thing, or a bit of
a Basket Case posse. Yeah.
Yeah, like Nightbreed sort of thing going on or something. Okay. I don't know. But I definitely recommend it. It's fun, and it's got some insane deaths that don't, and the screaming. That's what I remember. It's very loud. You know those films that just like constantly screaming, and you're like, Jesus Christ,
just constantly.
And I feel like I've reused the same sound effect over and over again too many times. But yeah, that's my gust for the week. There's a couple of good ones. I also watched Swiss Army Man. I don't know if any of you guys have seen that. It's not a horror at all.
Oh, I missed that. Is it any good?
I think it's a little bit confused as to what the story is actually about. But the soundtrack and the way there's a Jurassic Park moment in Swiss Army Man that is one of the best film moments I think I've seen.
A Jurassic Park moment.
Yeah, I don't want to ruin it, but it's about a guy stranded on a deserted island. And Daniel Radcliffe washes up. He's a corpse, and then he starts a lot of guffing. Actually, a lot of guffs in this film. It's pretty much that's the main thing of the film is Daniel Radcliffe when he farts when gas passes out of his dead body. He starts to talk, and as the main guy played by Paul Dano starts to explain to this dead body about what human life and civilization is like, he starts to come back to life. It's a weird film, but the soundtrack, I've not stopped listening to the soundtrack.
How did that get greenlit?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
Daniel Radcliffe, I bet, like, oh
yeah,
he was on board with it. They probably went, oh, Harry Potter's in it, get on board.
Yeah, but some of Daniel Radcliffe's acting in this is the best acting I've seen him do ever. Because his face is like swollen and sort of out of shape, but he's still like performing. It's kind of amazing.
I mean, he's come a long way, hasn't he, from when he was a child and was objectively awful to actually being really good now. I really liked him in The Woman in Black as well.
Yeah, he's good in that, yeah. And Horns as well.
I've not seen that.
That's quite good. So we crack on with the film of the week.
Let's do it.
So hi!
We're on number 5. We're nearing the end. The end is upon us, I guess. So, 5, Halloween from 1978. Ben, have you got some gubbins?
Got some gubbins. Always got some gubbins. So, Halloween is a 1978 American slasher film directed and scored by John Carpenter, co-written with producer Deborah Hill, and starring Donald Pleasance and Jamie Lee Curtis in her film debut. So, the film tells the story of serial killer Michael Myers as he stalks and kills teenage babysitters on Halloween night. Sounds a bit cliche.
It does a little bit, yeah. This is what Empire have to say. Many have tried to imitate John Carpenter's style and mood in the years since he carved his way into the horror pantheon, but few, if any, can match him. Inspired by Hitchcock, he found the scares lurking within suburbia, making them instantly relatable to the audience. And he's helped by a combination of the simple horror of Michael Myers and the naive yet tough charm of Jamie Lee Curtis' heroine. You can largely ignore the sequels, with a soft spot for the third and reboot. Stick to the original, see the true master of the creepy tension-building story at work. Stream Halloween now with Amazon Video. Ignore that bit. It's interesting to put that in the review. But yeah, it's 93% on Rotten Tomatoes, 7.8 out of 10 on IMDb. Ben can't quite believe. Can't quite believe
it's available on Amazon Video now. The low, low prices in which it's available.
I just can't believe it. I mean, is it available now? I mean, God.
It is, yeah.
Well, I missed a trick. God, Jesus. What was it? What was it on IMDb? Sorry, 7.
7.8. You know, it's classic IMDb.
7.something.
I don't know why I keep saying. I'm just kind of always amazed when it gets to 8. Or as low as a 6, which I think we've had a couple. But yeah, so what are you guys like Halloweenies? Are you big, like, Michael Myers people? Because some people, like, especially in our Facebook group, are big Halloween people. They had to watch the trailer together for the new one and that kind of thing. I've never been that person. Been that for me.
Not really. I think the first Halloween film I saw was Halloween 20 years later, so H2O.
That's the one
Which came out in 98, so, like, obviously off of the back of the slasher film getting a bit of a resurgence with Scream and everything, obviously in 96, I believe. Obviously, we got loads of things, like I Know What You Did Last Summer after that, and this. So, like, I was at the right sort of age to kind of start enjoying these films. That was the first one I'd seen. And I went back and I watched a few of those, a few Friday the 13th, but I've never been, like, massively into the sort of slasher genre. So this was kind of like, this even though I had seen this film before, this felt like a new experience. I didn't remember all that much about it.
Yeah. So H2O was the same for me, the first one I saw. And I was big into those sort of meta slashes, like.
And then there was Halloween Resurrection not long after that, which I completely forgot about.
So is that the one with Busta Rhymes
beats him with karate? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So I did watch that one, and I think that's maybe why I was like, Halloween's not for me. I'm not a fan of this.
And then remade by Rob Zombie in 2007. Is that correct?
Didn't watch any of the Rob Zombie remakes.
Yes, I think so.
I've not seen either of them. So what? I mean, I guess my question is why are these sort of so prime for like being remade? Because I wouldn't particularly say the mythology and the lore is all that interesting. I mean, feel free to completely shoot me down there.
I've seen a fair few slashes over the past year or so from around a similar sort of time, and after watching this, this one has the best meat in terms of, you know, Donald Pleasance and his sort of the mental asylum and all that kind of background and stuff. And it's definitely still like a slasher. Like, I don't think there's too much there. But I always watch Friday the 13th, but now that I've seen this, I do think there's more to this first Halloween than there is to a lot of the Friday the 13th films. But still, I don't know. I mean, I can see why this is a classic, and I do enjoy watching it, but it's still not. And I will watch the new one that comes out this Halloween.
Yeah, because from seeing that trailer, that does seem interesting. Not that, not that I'm massively knowledgeable when it comes to this franchise or everything, but obviously I have a slight bit of knowledge to do with Michael Myers. I thought the plot seemed fairly interesting. Again, it does seem to like cherry pick from different films, doesn't it? And
yeah, well, I think this was like the one of the first of that. This is where everywhere cherry picked from Halloween.
Yeah.
What about you, Andy? Are you a Halloween fan?
Yeah, I would say I am. I've certainly enjoyed the movies. For me, just down to like the overall feelings on the franchise and the character involved. I've always been big into slasher movies, but I think I find you can have a lot more fun with Freddy and Jason because the way those franchises evolved. You know, the cinematic moments are a lot more sort of bombastic and over the top, and there's some more comedy elements thrown in. Whereas, for the most part, Halloween's always played it pretty straight. And obviously we'll get into it when we go through the movie, but you can see why it's iconic and everything now. But like watching this movie again to prepare to talk for this, it's actually like really understated in a lot of moments. And it's a very efficient horror movie. I'd say nowadays, if you weren't paying actors and so on, you could probably recreate a lot of this film with pretty much zero budget, right? It's all done with, you know, really practical, really straight up, you know, production techniques and how it's put together. The shots and the music things are particularly like, you know, notable and incredible, but as a fan of horror, I think if I was going to watch a movie with a bunch of friends and, you know, around the house, you're going to roar with laughter and so you'd probably go for something a little bit more over the top. Yeah. This is like a sort of quiet watch and enjoy type of horror movie.
It's more like Hitchcock than like Friday the 13th.
It's
more like Psycho-y. But what were we going to say, Ben?
The soundtrack does a lot. It just elevates everything just that extra step, doesn't it? Because it's got that. Now that we're familiar with all of John Carpenter's work, now it just kind of takes it to that next level where it feels like even more of a classic.
I've listened to that soundtrack far more than I've watched the Halloween movies.
Same here, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, but I was going to say, so I watched a lot of slashes recently from a little bit later that were inspired from this film. They had maybe the same budget or a little bit more. But none of them are as good in terms of just filmmaking. Like, a lot of them are kind of shoddy, whereas this one, like, made for little to no money. It just, John Carpenter's just so confident in everything. Feels very polished and well put together for something so low budget.
Yeah. So where does this sit in his filmography? This is like a few years before The Thing. Was The Thing next?
So I think it was Assault on Precinct 13 and then this, I believe. I might be wrong.
What was that, sorry? It was
Assault on Precinct 13, I think, was his first super low budget.
So that was 76.
Yeah.
Then it was this, and then, the next... Oh, he did The Fog, and then Escape from New York, and then The Thing. I mean, listen to that for like a...
Yeah.
From 80 to 80... he's making film pretty much every single year throughout the 80s.
Yeah.
That's standard, isn't it?
I liked the Howard Hawks original version of The Thing is in this film. They're watching it.
Oh, yeah. Right.
You just see the title credits. And I didn't realize, but the title credits were almost exactly the same as the title credits in like the way they sort of unveil. It's exactly the same as the John Carpenter's thing as well. But yeah, it's good. I mean, I will say in terms of acting, Donald Pleasance is like he's almost too good because everyone else is sort of like obviously not theatrically trained or whatever. Donald Pleasance, he adds like some gravitas to every single line he says. There's a bit even when he's just like teasing some kids outside the house. I'm just like that. I believe that. But like everyone else, whenever they say a single word, I'm like, I don't. What? You don't like that dog? I don't believe you. Like, this word's coming out.
They're not actually. He's like the only one that really tries to deliver his lines. And obviously, if you think of the names now, it's very easy to forget that this is, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis's first movie. Now, if you think, oh, she's an actress that's been in, you know, tens
Halloween
of movies.
H2O.
And, yeah. Halloween H2O. The new Halloween. At least three. Freaky Friday.
Yes.
But obviously at the time, this is her first movie, so she's much like the others, right? That maybe she's slightly better than some of the people that didn't go on to become huge stars. But Donald Pleasance, old Blofeld himself, does a damn good job.
So a little bit of trivia, just right from the get-go, because we're talking about Donald Pleasance. Where was Donald Pleasance born?
Where was he born?
Yeah.
A hospital.
Yes, but it wasn't what I'm looking for. It's so he's born in Worksop, which is like next door to Mansfield. And I was a bit blown away from that, near to my hometown.
Donald Pleasance, local lad.
He didn't sound like he's from Worksop. People from Worksop don't sound like that. But yeah, it's something to aim for all of us, really. Cool. Okay, so let's jump into the cast. Key players, we've got Donald Pleasance, like we said, he plays Dr. Loomis. He is, I guess, Michael Myers' psychiatrist or handler. He's been looking after him for, what is it, how many years is it? 13 years or something?
Written it down. 15 years he spent, he said then he goes on, he spent 7 years trying to get him rehabilitated and then 8 years trying to make sure he just never got out of prison again. So he gave up.
Yeah, you're going to go anywhere, yeah.
A lot of effort, and that's a lot of years to dedicate to one person. Oh, come on, Michael.
I think he made it worse, and he's like, I don't want you getting out because people are going to start thinking I'm bad at my job. Yeah. Insane, just the insane red stamp.
Incurably insane,
Scheduled for lobotomy. Jamie Lee Curtis, like you said, plays Laurie Strode. Laurie Strode, that name, there's a character, the combo character thing called Lufus Strode. Have you ever read the... it's like a martial arts thing called The Case of Lufus Strode or something like that. Okay, check it out. But this reminded me of the name. And then a bunch of other people who probably... There's Linda and Lindsay. I always get... I can't tell you which one is which, but these are like Jamie Lee Curtis's friends.
I don't think they're very good friends in particular. They're a bit horrible to them. A bit annoying, aren't they?
They smoke. Yeah.
They bloody smoke, don't they?
They do. That's the real killer. Some of them smoke in bed. The real killer in the whole movie. Oh
my God.
There's a little bit of inconsistency with the names. Maybe I wasn't paying proper attention, but we'll come to it because there's one line that comes off very weird in about halfway through the movie, and I was like, "Do you what?"
Is this okay? Oh yeah. Well, I might know what you mean. We'll talk about it.
There's a Laurie, a Linda. And a Lindsay, right?
Lindsay's the little girl.
Oh, yeah.
The really ignorant little girl that doesn't answer the phone. Yeah. Annie is the slutty mate that is banging on about not having sex all the time when she's having to babysit. It's like, only trick or treat, and I'm getting tonight. And, I've spilt some butter on myself, so I better strip off literally to my pants.
Yeah.
And then Linda must be the blonde friend
who has hanky panky in the bedroom.
with Bob.
With Bob, okay.
Bad Bob.
So I mean, none of these people, I don't think they went on to do much after this. I don't think Halloween acting was their big goal in life. Who knows? I'd hope they all went on to do other stuff, gardening or whatever. I don't know.
Shakespeare,
yeah. So the film opens. It's Halloween night. It's all the POV shot, very Evil Dead. We're in a place called Haddonfield. We've got basically Michael as a kid putting on a clown mask and stabbing
he nips upstairs, and I was watching through there when it first comes up. When it first comes up, the POV shot shows like a couple run upstairs to bed, isn't it? And then the lights go off because they've obviously got some type of, for teenagers, attractive young teenagers, body dysmorphia, because they're gonna go upstairs, lights straight off, no lights on.
Yeah.
Lights off, don't look at me. And then 2 minutes later, the time it takes Michael to walk around the house and go inside, the guy is heading out. He's getting his shirt back on.
Yeah, he's just like,
wow, yeah.
See you later.
Well, see you tomorrow. Bye.
Well, I'm finished. What else? What other reason is there for me to be here? Well, we could just like cuddle and talk. And then, see you later.
Yeah.
Bye bye.
Yeah. Don't even see me to the door. Bye. And then he's.
And then he's
off on his merry way, and then the girl in the situation is still in her pants upstairs. That's why she didn't come see him to the door, I guess, not dressed. Takes her a bit longer because she's got to do a bra up, I guess. But yeah. And then old Michael Myers nips in and gives her a stabbing, doesn't he?
Stabs one off. Well, I mean, it's quite brutal, I think. Remember what happens now, but we see through his point of view. There was a bit where, so we're seeing through his point of view and he's stabbing, and he kind of like looks off to the corner of the room, and he's still, you see his hand stabbing. If you're stabbing someone, you're on focus. Surely you're not like...
He just got distracted, didn't he? He was like, what's going on over there? He's just having a nice stabbing.
Yeah.
And then he goes back downstairs, and this is our first reveal, isn't it? Because a car pulls up as he's nipping out with his knife and his clown outfit and his... We assume it's his mom and dad, right? They come home and are like,
you killed your babysitter / like, sister, all right?
Yeah, sister. And then it's like, gasp, what's this, Michael? And then it comes out of POV mode and they pull the mask off and he's just a wee boy of 6.
Yeah.
But then his parents don't ask any follow-up questions. They don't know there's been a murder. Yeah. They're just him
and
in the street with
like
a knife.
1,000-yard stare.
Yeah, like, and they go, Michael. And then just stand there looking at him in silence.
And then he goes, every year children murder the babysitters because of video games.
Yeah.
This little PSA. and then we cut to, 15 years later, as we previously discussed.
Yeah.
So now we're with Dr. Loomis, and he's, they're driving through the dark. I think it's raining.
It's tipping it down. It's Jurassic Park style rain.
He's talking to this woman, and she's I think she's a nurse. She's going to take Michael to prison or something, right?
Going for a parole hearing, isn't he? And then they're saying, oh, what am I going to give him? So I'll give him this massive dose of horse tranquilizers.
Yeah.
So he'll barely be able to sit up, and he's like, oh, that's the point, because I'm trying to fuck him over so he never gets out.
Yeah, he won't get to say it at all in his hearing. So... We get the impression that like he's almost supernatural in the way Dr. Loomis is talking about him. He's not human. He's not real.
Yeah, he describes him as a monster, doesn't he? I'm not sure if it's here. I know this is the bit where very sensitive to mental health issues. The nurse lady goes, "Oh, it's their gibberin that I can't. It's the gibberin that does my head in." And he's like, "Oh, it's all right. He hadn't spoken for years, so that's good." And is it this bit or later when he says, oh, he's got the eyes of evil, just black eyes and
sharp eyes,
the eyes of the devil.
It's weird because when we see him later on, he looks like a dude to me.
Yeah.
He's like a typical dude. But,
just a guy with a slightly lazy eye.
Yeah.
That's the devil's eyes.
they sort of pull up outside of this place and I think the lights are off or... The inmates have escaped.
They just see a couple of inmates like milling about in the rain, and they don't immediately notice it's a mist. The nurse lady goes, "They let them outside." And they're like, "Well, not in the pouring rain, they don't."
Yeah.
And then Donald Pleasance, Dr. Loomis, goes to the security gate to try and phone up what's happening. And while he's making that call, about a meter away from the car. Someone jumps on the roof and spooks the lady into getting out, doesn't?
Yeah, he does the ooga booga hand. He just like throwing his hand up, like slap, like he's trying to tango her, but not quite. It's like pretending his hand's a bat in a hair or something, just flicking it around. I'm gonna mess your hair up, and he starts twiddling your hair and stuff and curls.
And she's like, "No, mate, don't." And she,
yeah,
Just add this did.
And she put, Javi just slams on the accelerator in reverse or something, right?
Yeah, she like sort of screeches about the place a little bit. Does a 3-point turn, luckily, which is handy in a moment for Michael's escape. She does a panic 3-point turn and then tumbles out of the car. Michael Myers then gets into the car. And despite the fact he's been incarcerated since he was 6 years old, drives away very efficiently. I guess herein lies the issue of the fact that most American cars are automatics, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if it was,
if this had been the UK, he wouldn't have got away. He'd have been kangarooing down the road, trying to get out of first,
stalling it. Just here, see his hand. One sec. Just going again.
Captured, and then it'd be like, you know.
Busted.
Worst thing that would have happened would have been, one of the orderlies lost their job for letting him out in the first place. But thankfully, having been in prison since he was six, he didn't know how to drive.
Yeah. Did
we even get a good look at him at this point?
No, we didn't see him for a long time, do we?
We just see that there's a tall man. We don't really see his face because he's sort of obscured by the rain coming down the windows of the car when you just see the shape jump on the top. Yeah. And then you just see his hand wibble wobble through the window.
Wait, is that Michael's hand wibble wobbling? I thought that was a random insane person's hand.
Oh, I think unless he had an accomplice, I assumed that was Michael.
I thought because there was insane. Well, they didn't know if they were insane, but they were just out people, inmates out about milling about in the rain. I just thought one of them had monkey jumped on top and just.
Also, he used another person wibble wobbling her to. To get in, and then he's like, right, now's my chance. I'll nick a car.
I think I prefer the idea of beating Michael. I like the fact that he's got the wibble wobble technique. Because is that right? The film, he's very slow.
Otherwise, he just drove off on his own and didn't take his accomplice with him, which is out of order.
Yeah. Thanks for the help, mate. Bye.
What are you doing?
So
he's probably picked that up, that abrupt exit from that the boyfriend of the girl he killed. So, after you've got what you want from someone, you leave immediately.
Yeah. In and out. Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
He drives off, heads back to Haddonfield, a place where he lived originally 15 years back. Apparently he gets like a part-time job as a mechanic and the William Shatner impersonator or something. The next time we see him, he's got like overalls and a... Do you find out how he got the overalls? Is there like a...
He just kills a mechanic, doesn't he? Like kills him, steals his overalls.
You hear that a shop has been robbed later on and they said, all they took was... a mask, some rope, and some knives, but the overalls aren't covered in the theft.
Yeah. It's weird though, because if something like happens like that, it's really specific for them to know exactly what he took. Like someone's broken in, but didn't look like they've taken. Oh, I've taken that mask, and there's definitely 12 knives here, and now there's 10.
Yeah,
and a little bit of rope.
For insurance purposes, it was so good they had the robbery the day after stock take.
Yeah.
Just an inventory.
It was fine. This rope, the 24 meters of this rope there was, and it's only 12. Damn it.
He cut a very specific amount that he wanted.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to take the piss, you know? I mean, I know I'm off to murder some people, but I don't want to, like, ruin a small business.
Take what you need, because obviously he's very attached to that community. He doesn't want to see the town suffer.
Yeah. No, just the people who live there.
Yeah.
What, did he use the rope? Because I'm trying to think, the only time I see him using something is a telephone wire.
He must use it later on because for the jump scare later when Bob comes swinging down an acrobat, he must have used it to hang him up.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah. So the next scene we've got, I think we're introduced to Laurie Strode, our main character. She's dropping off she's got a little kid she babysits.
And he's got a lot of activities. Spill your drink.
I did just spill my drink. Wait there. Oh God. It's all good. Literally on the laptop as well. So carry on.
So Ben's drying up. So this is the point where we meet Laurie for the first time, like you say, and she is chatting to the kid that she's going to be babysitting that evening, and he has got a lot of things planned. He was like,
"Oh yeah."
So are we gonna carve a pumpkin? Yeah, we are. And we're gonna watch the movie marathon. Yep. And we're gonna make popcorn. Yep.
Yeah.
And we're going to sort out Cold Fusion. Absolutely.
They also do this weird thing where they're watching a film and then they go, this is later on, they're watching a film and then they go and do the pumpkin and they go, should we watch the rest of the film? I'm like, you must have missed at least 45 minutes of the film.
Yeah, and it's Halloween night. It's on live. You haven't got this on, you know, on
it's
Betamax.
Yeah, it's Netflix. Yeah.
Maybe that was, you know, the forward-thinking nature of the film.
Yeah.
Filmmakers.
Yeah.
They knew.
How's your laptop, Ben?
Yeah, it's all right. It's fine. Oh, cool. What I was doing then was I was dispersing water into my hand and then rubbing it on my back. Got a bit of a sweaty back. It is incredibly warm. And then I got carried away and then laptop. Covered in water. I think it's
all right. Nice to clean it every now and again.
Yeah,
it's nice to clean it. Water, not a sticky drink.
Not a sticky drink. Yeah, you got to clean it now and again. Sometimes I just get in the shower with it or have a bath with it.
Yeah.
Just to make sure it's all right, you know. And I think it is.
Cool.
Well, we can still hear you, so you haven't exploded.
Woo!
Okay, so Laurie drops off her ward, her little kid.
And then it's off to school, I guess.
I think she meets her... Oh, no, so she sees Michael Myers standing behind a bush.
Yeah.
Oh, well, this is the bit where that's after they're chatting a bit later on. I think right now Michael Myers just sees her, and this is one of the interesting sort of shot techniques they have here in the film, because obviously every time Michael Myers is on screen, the music comes in. But as he's watching her, like, it's a really, really long shot. Like, she walks all the way down that street, and he's just there, like,
Kiwi!
Have a little watch.
Well, does he see her drop off? She drops off a key, like at his former house.
Oh, is that where? Is that the significance? I maybe missed
the significance. I think, yeah.
And the dad's going to sell it or something.
Dad's going to sell the house. Yeah,
that's right.
But then obviously throughout the day, she notices Michael Myers just randomly appearing in different.
Yeah, because he watches them for a little bit. Because then, in the next scene, we sort of follow her to school, don't we? Where we see her sitting through the lesson and. Unlike a lot of other teenagers that are, you know, daydreaming and messing about in class, she actually answers the teacher's question. But then we go outside the school where the little boy is being bullied by some no good bully kids.
Yeah.
Who, unusually for a film like this, don't get their comeuppance at all. They.
That's a good point. One of them runs into Michael later on.
And he just gives him a reassuring little hold on the shoulders, doesn't he?
Yeah.
On
your way, lad. Go on.
If you need another bully to join in with you, I'm right here. Don't worry about it.
If that or like, don't run, mate. It's
yes,
you could have bumped into me then.
Yeah, went into my fucking nads, lad. Watch it. we're introduced to Thingy's friend as well. The main friend, I guess, is the main friend Nancy, the one with the butter on the top. I mean,
there's Annie and there's Linda.
There's
Nancy's Nightmare on Elm Street.
Right, yeah.
Linda and Annie, and they're talking about how poor old frumpy Laurie's never going to get a date unless she puts herself out there. And they're putting together all their plans because they're all doing some combination of babysitting or sleeping with boyfriends that evening.
It's either or, isn't it, really?
Babysitting and shagging combo. You've got to get involved. You can't do one without the other.
Yeah.
But that's what they're sort of planning. And then this is where Michael Myers cruises past in his, like, mental asylum car again. And this is another moment that I picked up on as well, because, like, he drives past and then I think it's Annie shouts, "Oi, dickhead, like, speed kills, you know," and he's driving past at like 15 miles an hour.
They look at him, he goes,
and because then the music comes on, I imagine that he's actually got that blaring out of his radio.
And then maybe it is a geared car, because I'm sure he stalls the car at this point and he has to get it going again.
Speed kills,
and he goes, oh, god damn it,
yeah. Foot slips off the clutch. So I think one of the main points about Laurie is that she's the main difference is that she is good in the sense of she's innocent. She's doesn't smoke.
She has a little blast on a mate's cigarette.
She has a blast on a cigarette.
Little blast. That's a little blast on a crack pipe off screen.
Sounds a couple of those darts.
I think she did do a couple of lines as well when she was doing the popcorn or the pumpkin. But so she's good, and I think the other two are. I mean, to think this sort of idea came from this film? The innocent one is the final girl, or
yeah,
it came somewhere else?
I think this has got to be, if not the first, a very early example, right? Because she's the one that doesn't have a boyfriend and isn't working on dates, whereas the other two are directly planning how much rutting they're going to do this evening.
Yeah. On Wikipedia, there's a bit where John Carpenter, they say to John Carpenter, why is that what this film is about? Like, the good person doesn't get tortured, it doesn't get killed while the others do. And he said, no, it's just how it came out. And so there must have been like a subconscious thing there where the innocent person is...
John Carpenter wasn't getting laid at the time. He was like, everyone who has sex deserves to die.
Yeah. See, at the time, he was wearing a lot of William Shatner masks.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So what happens next? So
this is the after that discussion, that's when we have a couple of little filler scenes, one where they go and talk to the dad of Annie, who is the sheriff, who talks them through the very, very specific robbery of those items of the store that just had its inventory taken.
Yeah.
And we also have Dr. Loomis. You know, normally you have films like this where people don't take the kids seriously in The Sinister Force. This is the film where people don't take the very qualified doctor seriously. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, he's having a chat with the people who run the hospital, and he's like, mate, he's the most dangerous prisoner ever. And he's like, he's going to go back to that town where he's from. Well, so you say, mate. And then, well, you've got to phone the sheriff. I ain't got to do nothing. Like,
yeah.
Like, you should have been more careful.
And I just do my shift and I clock out and get out of here.
Yeah.
I don't care.
And then I think we also have in what is a very similar sort of time frame, because again, this is a film before mobiles were invented. Donald Pleasance on the drive, because I think the hospital man says, oh, it's hour and a half drive to that place. Like, you'll never get all that way. And while the doctor Loomis is on the way there, he phones the sheriff's office and says, massive murderer coming your way, mate. I'll come and talk to you about it. And he finally arrives there after the sheriff's had that chat with Annie and Laurie. And he's like, really got to talk to you. And the sheriff's like, give you 2 minutes. I'll give you 2 minutes. There's been a burglary.
Yeah.
This
shop has lost $20 worth of stock.
And that's double. Well, that's double the biggest crime in this town, all right? Two knives are right there.
So I'll have a chat to you about this murderer issue that you've got.
Yeah.
And we see a lot more build up. I've lost the exact sequence here, but there's at some point where he also nips to the custodian of the local graveyard and sees that the graveyard has also been nicked.
Doesn't he go with the police chief?
Is it the police chief that goes?
No, there's a guy there, isn't it? I mean, it's just a grave robber. like a gardener or something.
And then
the whole graveyard was nicked. You just said the whole grave. You go there, everything's gone. It's a massive sinkhole.
Yeah.
He's talking him through it, isn't he? And the graveyard guy talks a little bit about the thing. Oh no! After that, there's been no one around since that day, and the house has been empty since those days. And then he's got his little graveyard maps. Oh, here we are, 32C. Where the? Wait a minute.
Wait a second.
And it's like, oh, rotten kids stealing gravestones. Why do they do? Mate, how many gravestones have you had stolen? Yeah. Bloody kids.
Bloody kids coming around here with their super strength, ripping them off.
Sledgehammering them. Gravestones out of the ground.
I always thought that was where they took the gravestone and not the body. Or did he take both?
I think he just took the gravestone to do his set piece a bit later on.
See, the scariest thing for me about Michael Myers is that set piece that he builds, because it's just like so illogical that it kind of illustrates just how much of a psychopath he is. Like,
but that's really—it's really premeditated, though, because he's nicked the gravestone and all of those accessories from that shop just to make it.
Yeah, but like he's got his own like inner sociopathic logic that doesn't make sense with something that makes sense to me. Do you know what I mean? I find that idea quite scary. That he's—you're not
a psychopath, Luke, or are you?
I did the psychopath test.
What did it say?
Failed.
Failed.
Yeah.
Does that mean you are or you aren't?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I don't know. I know I'm not a psychopath. I think that's a good book, by the way. That is what a psychopath would say. But yeah, it's just that's quite a scary idea. I think it's like Jason has this thing where he just goes to kill people at the camp. Whereas Michael Myers, this whole gravestone thing just baffles me. And I find that quite scary. Just have no idea why would he even think to do that.
Arts and crafts.
He's probably got a lot of subtext to it. He's been in prison for 15 years. Probably just been sketching it out. You know, when you have like an idea when you're a kid, because obviously he's been there since he was six. He was like, right, I'll get the gravestone from that woman's grave.
Is he drawing it in crayons?
Like yeah, it's not. Yeah.
Let me write this down. He's in years of a catatonic state for all this time. He's just, he hadn't had any sort of anything to entertain him. He's had absolutely no stimulation. He's just like, when I get out, I'm going to get a fucking gravestone and I'm going to make a real.
Yeah, maybe that's it, though. He hasn't been catatonic because of his ongoing mental problems. He's just been really he hasn't had a pen to write this down with. So it's like, right, in his head, he's like, gravestone, 12 feet of rope. It's just going over the list.
So what happens? So Dr. Loomis at some point goes to the original house.
This is when he nips in again. This is before the sun really goes down. And he goes in with the sheriff and they find out that Michael Myers has been there, and we don't see this overtly on the screen, but they get in and they go, oh, what's that? And they go, oh, looks like a dog, maybe. And then he goes, oh, he must have been hungry. And he was like, well, hang on, you can steal knives and things like that. Why do you have to then eat a dog?
Like he
spent 6 years not in prison. He clearly liked Halloween, so you could have robbed some sweets.
Yeah. Candy from people's houses or something, yeah.
Yeah, but no.
That would have added to the legend for me. If he, as he was stalking in people's houses, his hand just, his wibbly wobbly hand went into like food bowls, took like some pick and mix. Poking like a Twizzler through the mask hole.
Yeah, or get some like Wotsits or things like that. You can have all the snacks, but no.
Wotsits would stain that lovely clean mask.
That sounds
great.
There'd
be orange or limp.
And you'd see him like stick his like dusted finger through the hole, and it would come out clean.
So
that's more horrific than the actual film.
No, so I guess to avoid getting cheesy Wotsit fingers, he eats dog. So he kills almost as many dogs as he does people in this film.
He does, yeah. There's in the trailer as well for the new one. There's a dog prominent, so I wonder if that will come into.
No.
Yeah, he won't last very long. So Loomis is showing him around, and he says the sheriff's like, "Look, mate, I've got stuff to do. Something in the oven, you know, pots are on the side." And Loomis is like, "Okay, well, I'll just hang around here because there's a murderer loose in this town."
And then that's the sheriff. He goes, "Oh, maybe I should put it out on radio." And Loomis is like, "Nah, don't do that, because then everyone will see him anywhere, and your men will be running all over town." So let's
wait for someone to die.
not do anything.
Yeah.
And then
until it's too late.
Yeah. And then when we just tell everyone to say nothing but keep their eyes open, and what appears happens is that they do just one of those things because no one does anything, and I don't see any policemen around in that street.
Yeah. At the same time, on the other side of Haddonfield, Laurie Strode keeps seeing Michael. He just keeps popping out of bushes.
Yeah, he's been popping out of bushes.
And then goes back in. Like on The Simpsons.
Sort yeah, of goes and, into only, it. And only yeah. she sees him. This is just after the Speed Kills bit where he stepped out from behind the bushes and her mate Annie doesn't see him.
Yeah.
And then she does. And then she marches over and goes, oh, there's a bloke here. He wants a date with you. And then he's gone, really.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a trickster.
There's a bit. So I wrote this down as a note. It was a weird dialogue thing. I'm not too sure what the context was. It's always a place to shit. And I'm sure there's a bit in the film where someone says, I'll always have a place to... And then someone else says shit. Because they've seen a...
It's brilliant. It's the friend. And they're talking about... I guess it's the blonde friend whose name we... Is it Linda? Who
Nancy,
is talking about...
Is.
Cause, yeah, so Sarah talks about... it's that because she's going round to the babysitting house where Annie's going to be with her boyfriend. And she's like, oh, because they want a place too. Someone interrupts a shit and she goes, I've got one of those. She doesn't have a place to neck in with her boyfriend. Apart from the massive van that they have, but decide they need a house. It's got to be romantic. So what better than a stranger's parent's house?
Yeah, it's a weird like a little line that sort of came out of nowhere. But I mean, John Carpenter's got sense of humor, so maybe it's come from there. I don't know. So I think it gets like nighttime now, right? I think the sun goes down and Halloween starts proper.
Yeah, we get towards Halloween properly. Everyone's doing their various bits of babysitting. The little boy that Laurie is looking after is a little bit spooked because those rotten bullies have been talking to him about the boogeyman.
Yeah.
Who's gonna come and get him?
Yeah, and he sees Michael outside at some point. He says, "There's the boogeyman." Could just be the random dude, but
he sees him about half a dozen times. It's like bloody Not Now Bernard. He's like, "Oh, the boogeyman's outside." Nah, he isn't. Stop.
Not taking him seriously at all. And the boogeyman, shut up.
Stop talking about the boogeyman. He's not fun. But now, even though you clearly already freaked out about something, just sit down and watch your horror movies.
Yeah. There's a point where, like, Laurie Strode is like, she's seen Michael about six times now. The kid's going about boogeyman outside, and there's a bit where she's going, "You're going crazy, Laurie. Call the fucking police." At this point, you need to call someone.
Yeah.
Haven't you seen anyone strange today? No, what are you on about, idiot?
Yeah.
That is definitely just your imagination, little boy. Now sit down while I do nothing about this.
I think not Nancy, the girl, the other baby
Annie
sitter. Right, okay.
Yeah,
so I think it's her Annie, moment now.
Annie cops it first, doesn't she, because she is waiting for her boyfriend to come round. And then first Michael Myers is doing a bit of spying on her. And she spills the tiniest amount of liquid, which she describes later as butter, but or like over her top. But literally, she's on the phone to Laurie as it happens, and you see her spill butter on herself through the window. And she goes, "Oh shit! I'm covered in this stuff now. I better get changed." And then literally takes all of her, literally strips down to her pants.
She was drinking a glass of hot butter, which everyone does, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, all my hot butter is all over me. So I'm gonna, and then she's like shouting to the kid, Lindsay.
And she doesn't even say Butterfingers. If you spill butter on you, you need to say Butterfingers. Such a missed opportunity.
Butterfingers.
Yeah.
So she strips off to her pants and then nips out to the lawn. Like she shouts to Lindsay, who I've written on my notes is the most ignorant kid in the world. Yeah. She shouts to Lindsay, says, "Oh, get us a robe or something," and then she nips out to put a wash on, gets stuck in the...
It's like an outdoor lawn thing.
Gets stuck in the window of that. The kid, Lindsay, the second time the phone rings, bothers to answer it and comes out to get her. She's stuck in the window, explains to the kid she was stuck in the window, And then the kid immediately, don't tell anyone I was stuck in the window. That's embarrassing. Goes back in, phones the boyfriend back and goes, oh, yeah, sorry she was late. She was stuck in a fucking window. Idiot.
She's covered in butter, though.
She's covered in butter.
Covered in butter from head to toe.
Yeah, surely she should slip right through. That doesn't sound hard.
Slide right through that window.
Yeah. Greased up like a Scotsman. And then, so how does she die? So she goes to get in the car. Oh, no. Okay, so she takes Lindsay
She drops ignorant Lindsay round to
Scaredy Pants Tommy's.
Scaredy Pants Tommy's house. And then she goes off to go and fetch her boyfriend. And while she's on the way, she's doing some singing, a general tune to things that happen. Like, I can't find the keys. Yeah. Going to get my boyfriend. No one's possibly here to kill me. And then she gets a strangling in the car.
Yeah, so that maybe that's the rope. It's not the telephone cable.
I mean, that's someone else.
She gets strangling, right? So he grabs her, and then he slits her throat. I think.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, when he gives her a strangling, and their hot breath makes the windows all steamy, and then
that moment of Titanic.
Yeah,
his wibbly wobbly fingers are like slipping all over the shop. Yeah, it's like butter, and he goes, "I just gotta get the knife."
Yeah. Oh, I'm not getting. Any purchase at all.
He's lactose intolerant.
You get a nice shot of, I think it's the first time we see a bit of a close-up of Michael's face.
Yeah, and, in the back of the car.
It's kind of scary because it's kind of it's kind of obscured a little bit from the glass. But it's got a ghoulish sort of, it looks like how the Scream mask sort of does, but
yeah,
obviously that's what that's based on, I guess. But yeah,
in the
build-ups
as well, there's so many nice little looks at it as well. I bet there's some you could probably even miss. The bit when she's in the laundry, it's a really, really subtle shot of him. You can just see there's the door and there's another window at the back, and you just see his little face having a little peep at her. But this is, as you say, one of the first times we get a really, really close look at him. For any type of extended period of time while he's choking the life out of Annie.
Yeah, I think it was really effective. I think I've even read somewhere that John Carpenter wasn't happy with the mask because it is a bleached, William Shatner mask.
Yeah, wasn't it literally they're like, right, we need a mask to this thing, and they sent out the interns or whatever to get it, and they said, oh, I've got this William Shatner mask that will paint grey.
They painted it.
I think they painted it grey, but
how does it even look like William Shatner? I can't see really any resemblance to William Shatner.
Did it have hair with it as well, like the William Shatner bit?
I'm not sure. But can you imagine how different this film would be? Would it have been as well received if there had been no William Shatner
mask or something?
Yeah, if it had been a Spock mask or a Scotty.
Yeah.
Or what's a rival franchise that was around? There had been a Blake 7 mask.
C-3PO mask.
Yeah,
it's interesting. It does work really well though. And now we're like, oh shit! I think we missed the point where he killed the dog.
He does the dog that loves everyone except
Nancy
Annie the babysitter. She's like, oh,
Kirsty, whatever her name is.
Yeah, Kirsty Michelle. So, so while Suzanne is talking about this dog not liking it, it goes out and barks, and then you hear it being murdered, and looks like he's strangled that as well. You see him briefly outside, probably still hungry after the other dog he ate.
Yeah, his stomach's grumbling. He wants a dog. And there's no butter on this one. He gets some right good purchase on it.
It's covered in margarine now.
Yeah.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah. So I think next up for the slaughter is
I guess we get a bit of build up now, because again, Scaredy Pants Tommy sees the boogeyman carry Annie back into the house over the road, and he says, "Oh, he's got the boogeyman's got her." And again, Laurie's like,
"This is Kirsty. What's it? What's the girl called? The little girl, Kirsty.
Lindsay.
Lindsay.
Ignorant,
Jesus Christ.
Ignorant Lindsay." So.
Lindsay, this is Lindsay's house that she's taken her into.
No, Lindsay. Yeah, he's gone back into Lindsay's house, which is where she was originally. And she took Lindsay over to Scaredy Pants Tommy's house, and then they're both together. So Laurie looks out the window, gets pissed off that Tommy is now scaring Lindsay, who then's like, "Oh, I believe you, Tommy. It's I believe the boogeyman was really there." They go, "Oh, get back to watching the thing from another world." and it'll all be all right. At that point, Linda phones.
Linda, right?
Yeah, so the blonde friend, whose name I'm not sure was Linda, it might be someone else as well. So Linda then phones up and says, she hasn't phoned up yet. She's outside in the car. And this is where I said there's some problematic dialogue, because Linda is out in the car with her boyfriend, whose name is Bob, I think. And they're getting a bit frisky, having a couple of beers in there, and they're going through their strategy. And they're like, right, we're going to go inside, chat for a little bit, then Annie will distract ignorant Lindsay, and then we'll go upstairs, and it's the first bedroom on the left. So, and then he's like, so go through the plan with me again. And then the boyfriend, old Bob, reads it through, like, okay, so I tear off your clothes, then yeah, you tear off my clothes, and then we both tear off Lindsay's clothes. And I was like, Lindsay's the kid, mate. Like, if you're subtly making...
Probably like, having a similar problem to me. Like, all these names are... She's like, you and Lindsay's 10 years old. What? No, I meant Kirsty. Susan. Sharon. Whatever.
Yeah. Anyone.
Like, I meant Petra. Right, so I had to rewind it and watch it again. He does say Lindsay, and I was like, well, I've just written here, Lindsay! Exclamation mark. They go inside. I think that actually them going inside was, there might be something in between, like maybe we see Laurie, seeing the boogeyman or something outside then. But then this is when we first, as they get into the house, no one's in there. It's all pitch black. They immediately start necking on the sofa, and then they give Laurie a ring and say, "Oh, she's not back yet. What should we do?" And she goes, "Oh, she's probably just out getting her boyfriend. She's meant to pick him up. So she'll be back in a bit." So that's when they go upstairs to have. They realise they can abandon the plan to distract ignorant Lindsay and can just go immediately upstairs to have some sex up there.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they do, although they are temporarily interrupted because poor Bob gets his rhythm thrown off by the phone ring and he's really pissed off. He's like, fuck's sake, can't concentrate with the phone ringing.
Who is on the phone?
It's Laurie to say, I think. Oh, no, we don't know who it is on the phone. It's Loomis. Possibly.
Hello.
It's possibly no one because they can't answer the phone in case it's Lindsay's parents, because they're not meant to be there.
Okay, yeah. So why do parents ring their own bed phone?
Yeah. Check if anyone's having sex in it.
Are you in my bed?
Oh, sex in my bed, are you? No.
The whole setup for this is so complicated, isn't it?
Yeah.
People are all going to different places and different houses, and kids go into different houses, and people having sex in beds. It's like, could it just be streamlined a bit more? Yeah. Like everyone's in the same place or what?
No wonder a murderer was able to run amok in the town. Yeah. Because all the adults in the street appear to have gone out.
Yeah.
Where have they gone? They've gone to like a swingers party.
Halloween swingers, that's it. Dogging. You have made a big point. I've just gone through the cast again, IMDb. We've got Laurie, Linda, Lindsay, Loomis. There's so many L names in this. That's a young writer's a common problem, I think. Using the same letter for most of your names make them sound too similar. But
okay.
Yeah, that's interesting. He had has a thing for L's.
Loomis, Laurie, Lauren, Lindsay, Linda, Luke.
So
Leonard.
Leanne is. he gets off the phone, and then the distraction of the phone over, they're able to complete their sex like moments later.
Complete their sex. complete.
He does. Yeah. He says sex complete, and he literally just rolls straight off. And then gives us some immediate shits like, oh, do you want a beer? He's like, yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of angry now. Yeah.
Shall I go and get it? Yeah. All you can say is yeah, yeah. And then she turns it around on him and goes, in that case, you go and get me a beer. And he's like, thought you get me one. And he's like, oh, nah, you're going now. And then he nips off and he does the classic, and I guess this is where Scream got it from, because he's like, I'll be right back.
Yeah.
And then he heads downstairs. Right. And gets a strangling, doesn't he?
From, he gets stabbing through the chest or something, because he sort of shunks him into the wall and he's sort of stuck there.
You know what I mean? It's a very, Michael Myers is a very efficient killer, isn't he? So he picks him up and he has a real intense stare at him while he's strangling him, and then a single stab manages to transfix him to the wall.
So he's been in a catatonic state. Was he catatonic whilst he was doing his press-ups? Like, how is he so incredibly strong? Yeah.
I guess he was catatonic. He put all his energy into growing.
Yeah, he's fought, and fought about growing.
Like, growing, thinking about his... You know, when you're really hungry, not really hungry, really full of dinner, you have to think about digesting your dinner, so it goes down.
Is that true?
It's a bit like that, yeah. Yeah, just sit and think about it quietly. So he's...
toilet time.
So that's what he's been doing, I guess. And like maybe thinking about his list for his diorama he's going to make. And
steroids, that, isn't it?
The Bruce Lee... Yeah. Bruce Lee one-inch punch, but with stab.
So he kills Bobbitts. He goes upstairs. He's like, you know what? I've killed a couple of things now, and I want to mix it up a bit. So he puts on his sheet, or maybe he does that by accident.
A bit of humor.
Yeah,
like, oh, I'll pretend to be a spooky ghost. And then he comes upstairs like, ooh.
Does he make that noise?
No. She assumes it's Bob because, as well as the sheet, he's put on Bob's glasses, hasn't he?
Right. Yeah.
Over the eye holes.
Almost seems like a character.
Yeah.
Did he actually do that? Did he put the glasses on?
Yeah, he puts the glasses on.
Oh, an absolute.
Unless it's like a technique, like you to draw her closer, so she won't run away or something.
Yeah, it just points out as he's killing her later. Because that wasn't to be funny.
Yeah,
that was a strategic move.
Yeah.
So when he gets closer, she, instead of trying to phone the police when she's running in panic, unless the phone rings and it happens to be Laurie, she runs down and she's on the phone. Laurie assumes it's them doing some more pranks, because earlier in the phone she has like a silent call from this girl, so she assumes this time is them doing a screaming phone call joke. Although I would argue that sort of sex screaming noises on the phone probably sound a little bit different. I haven't done the experiment, don't quote me on it.
Yeah.
But I would imagine that sex screaming probably sounds a little different from being strangled to death screaming. Yeah.
When you do your experiment, please send me the findings.
Yeah, I think it depends what you're into, Andy, doesn't it, really? Like. Yeah.
Although, would it be difficult to do that now because he uses a phone wire to do it, and who even has a house phone, let alone not a cordless one?
It's the charging cable. It's the USB cable.
Going he's going to USB it.
Yeah. So she gets cabled. Then I guess at this point, Loomis is... he's been hanging around outside the house. He's been scaring kids. I think.
Yeah, because it's those bullies, isn't it? The bullies go to the Myers house and he's like, fuck off!
Yeah. He looks super happy with himself when he does that as well. Yeah. There's a bit when he's standing in a bush as well. He must get some dodgy looks in that big coat.
He's got no trousers on at that particular thing.
He's got no trousers. Yeah.
Big coat in a bush outside a notoriously haunted and creepy house in the neighbourhood, whisper shouting at kids in a raspy voice.
At some point he finds his car, like the insane asylum car, and then that's how he knows for definite Michael is here. I don't know how he finds out where he is, though.
I think that's the point, though. He doesn't really, does he? Because it's in the neighbourhood and he's just been hanging out and waiting. Doesn't the sheriff come back? And he goes, he hasn't come back. Better give up. And he wanders off a little bit, which is what puts him into range of Laurie's screaming later on.
Right, okay.
But with that little break, that's how we find that, I guess... Laurie's either seen something, I guess it's after the call, she goes round to see, the phone hangs up when Linda's been strangled to death. And ironically, I bet she feels bad for this afterwards. She says, if you're messing about, I'm going to kill you. Little did she know. So she goes round to tell him off and mucking about and goes up the room, and then she stumbles into Michael's diorama, right? She finds the body of Annie on the bed. With the gravestone, and then what's his name? Bob swings down from the ceiling, and then in the cupboard, she would have missed that if she didn't fall into that cupboard while screaming.
Yeah,
yeah.
It falls open, and
what's her name's and hanging
Linda,
out.
Linda Laura Lauren is in there, dead as well. And then at that point, that's when... Does Michael come out and scare her then? Does he give her...
He comes out and tries to stab her, but he like slashes her arm.
Oh, he does, yeah.
It's this moment where you think, he's got a free shot here, and he's just completely fucked it.
And he wrecks her blouse, though, but don't worry. It's not Laurie's blouse that's expensive. It's Linda, who, when Bob talks about ripping off, goes, don't rip my blouse, mate. It costs a lot.
We don't
know how much Laurie's blouse cost. It could be cheap.
Primark blouse, I think.
Primarni, yeah. I think there's a bit of a chase around the house now. This basically goes into the cupboard, the wardrobe.
That's in Scaredy Pants' house.
Right. Yeah.
This is where she runs downstairs and Michael Myers has locked the back door by propping a rake against it. So she breaks the window, knocks it over so she can get out of the house.
Right, okay.
And,
that was random, wasn't it?
In the 5 minutes that she's been out checking out this murder house, Scaredy Pants Billy's gone to bed and she's beating on the door, trying to get back in. And Michael Myers is casually walking across the road towards her to get her. And as well as him walking very slowly to get her, the little kid takes ages to answer the door. She has to she bangs on the door and shouts to be let in, and nothing happens. She whazzes a plant pot at the window, smashes it.
Yeah.
And he's still and
she whazzes. She whazzes. Yeah, he doesn't hear it.
It is spooky, though, so you might.
Yeah.
He comes to the window, in the 2 minutes she's been away, he's gotten to bed and been fast asleep. He's like,
oh, it's the middle of the night or something. And it's like, 45 seconds.
It's like, who is it? And it's like, you think it is? It's your babysitter. Let me back in. And he comes to the door really casually, trotting down the stairs.
Where's
Ignorant Lindsay? I don't know. She's probably still watching the thing.
Ignorant Lindsay.
Yeah, probably not answering the door like she didn't answer the phone.
Yeah.
When someone's stuck in a window.
All this is happening and Lindsay doesn't even recognise it.
Doesn't even register.
Yeah.
Ignorant old Lindsay. so she gets let in. She slams the door immediately. But does she send the kid upstairs to bed? Because then this is when she sits on the sofa and Michael Myers... Yeah, it gives him a knitting needle right in the neck.
Oh.
And then it looks like he's dead. He kind of falls down. And this, she does this a couple of times. I keep thinking, you need to confirm the kill.
Yeah.
You can't fool me once. She falls down. I think she turns around. And then she's just letting him do his thing behind her. That sounds weird.
Yeah.
But then, does she get the phone out or something? Or does she... She's crying. I think,
does she go... She has, sits and takes a minute. And then she goes up and sees what's going on with the kids and takes her time to explain that the boogeyman is gone because she's killed him. And that's when he comes back again. He comes back up the stairs. And again, she sends the kids into the bathroom, tells them to lock the door, runs into the bedroom and then opens the window and hides in the cupboard.
Yeah.
And this is one of the iconic bits of Halloween, right? When she's in the cupboard and he's searching the room and you can see through the through the slats there that he's gonna come in, and then instead of opening the door sensibly he just smashes his fist through it, doesn't he?
Yeah,
smashes his fist through it, and then she gives him a coat hanger in the eye and he drops
it. Horrible. That made and me feel
she drops his yeah, he drops
I've sided
his
with
eye.
Michael at that point, you never coat hanger a man in the eye.
Never. He drops his knife and then she stabs him with it and assumes for the second time in this movie that he's definitely dead.
Yeah. And at this point, Loomis has heard, or is on his
Loomis
way.
Loomis has heard the commotion and is... Oh, he's sort of... This is when he's given up, I think. He's given up waiting in the house. Oh, been waiting here 2 hours now. I'm going. So he goes off. And then Laurie gets the kids out of the room they've locked themselves in and says, go and run out into the street screaming and then phone the police. And they follow her orders to the letter. Lindsay is not fazed at all, obviously.
Yeah.
But is straight... They go out and scream, which is what directs Loomis to this particular house.
Right, okay, yeah. So Loomis rocks up. Well, before that, Michael... He's just standing up all creepy, right? So I think he's lying
down. Yeah, he does a sit-up like the Undertaker.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where the Undertaker got that from. And then when people compared it to Michael Myers, he said he'd never seen the film.
But, and now he wasn't allowed to watch it.
Paul Bearer said, "Don't bother watching it. Gimmick infringement."
So then again, Michael attacks her. Loomis rocks up just in time, swinging his six-shooter.
He does. He
pops a cap. Pops a few caps in Michael's ass and
he
chest.
Pops so many in him that he blasts him right out the window, doesn't he?
Yeah. He falls down a flight, lands on the soft garden floor.
It's a really classic sound effect, isn't it? Like, that is the quintessential hitting the ground, like the crunch. It's like that sound now, whether it was a stock sound that people had before, whether it became one afterwards, that is the one.
Is it like the Wilhelm scream?
Yeah, right. But it's like it's like the thump on the ground, oof.
The Wilhelm thump. So again, they see him on the dead on the floor, and they think, yeah, he's dead. Nah, don't worry about him. Unless it's like an old game where when you kill something, it just evaporates. Like, the next time you look, he's just gone.
Yeah, I'll go down and get the coins that he's turned into in a minute. But then, I didn't write this down. Do you guys remember? There's something that like, because Laurie's gone temporarily insane. She's like, this is the boogeyman. And then Loomis turns around and says, you know, something like, which is no comfort to a truly traumatized girl or not. Like, very well believe it was, my dear.
It
was the bloody devil.
He just wants a new patient because his old patient's dead now. He's done a runner. Yeah. He's like,
did you say you're curably insane or incurably insane? Because I've been burned before.
And then that's how it ends. I mean, credits roll at that point.
It's direct. It's a direct, like, really sharp end, right? There's a quick tour around the house, like it's
And then we hear some breathing as well while there's a tour around the house, which kind of like shows he could be anywhere. He could be anywhere in that house now, or outside.
Anywhere in this two-bedroom house.
Yeah, he could be anywhere. Where is he going to be?
Yeah.
Find his keepers. Look under the sofa. Look in the shower.
Yeah. I was in the kitchen. Michael, you're right. Okay, so trivia. You ready?
Yeah.
You just take it in turns. Okay, so number one, some critics have suggested that Halloween may encourage sadism and misogyny by audiences identifying with its villain. Is this true or false?
Well, probably true, I guess. Someone's probably said that.
It's
true.
Well, it does say it's true, but I don't really understand how anyone could claim that people are identifying with its villain. It just seems to me like such a... He's the bad... Like, he's not even like a... he's not even like a proper like a motivation. Like, it's such an how could you?
I hate babysitters. What a bunch of fucking twats!
Yeah,
kill them all. Yeah.
Babysitters whose names begin with L. Fucking
they can rot.
Okay, yeah. Number two and three are kind of linked. Number two, what was the film made for? What was the budget for the film? Whoever's closest gets
was
the
it
biscuit.
Like in the 100,000s.
Well, you tell me. Is it? We're not gonna
500,000.
Okay, Andy.
I'm gonna go with 500. No, I'm gonna go 750,000.
So, Ben, you've got that one. It's $300,000. Dollars. The film was made for number three. Then, how much did it gross? How much did the film gross? How much did it make?
6 million.
Is that original box office, or is that like how much has it made today?
Original box office.
Original box office. Is it adjusted for inflation? Not that it's going to help me.
I don't know.
I'm going to say it made $12 million.
What did you say, Ben?
Six.
Okay. It made $47 million.
Jesus.
It's one of the most profitable films ever made. You know, spawned franchise. It's I think Ben, you took the biscuit on that one, on both of those. So well done, Ben. Well,
no, yeah, but Andy said 12, and I said 6.
Oh yeah.
It was 7.
Okay, you both got half the biscuit.
That was the closest without going over.
Okay. Okay. So before the film was called Halloween, the film had a different title. Was it A, Baby's Day Out? B, Taking the Mick? C, The Babysitter Murders, or D, I'm a big boy now.
What's going on? I'm hoping C. Is it?
I'm going to go with C.
It was C, the Babysitter Murders. Although I would have preferred I'm a big boy now.
I'm a big boy now, yeah. That would have been good.
Mommy, wow.
Lindsay, Linda, and Lynn. Lindsay, Linda, and Lynn get lynched.
Yeah.
Number five. What time signature is a Halloween theme written and composed and performed by John Carpenter? What time signature is it performed in?
3-4
Andy?
Trying to dick all about music.
Oh, no, wait, no.
No,
stop.
You've had your answer.
Oh, no.
In a lot of interviews, he does, John Carpenter does talk about it a fair bit. He's kind of proud of it, I think.
I don't even know if this is a thing. I'm going to say 3-6
It's 5-4 So,
It's very prog, isn't it? It's like a Rush riff when you think about it.
Yeah, I think he said like his dad did.
Yeah.
He said something about his dad was a musician, and his dad was talking about 5-4 time signature. And I think he was just playing a little riff on the piano just to get a feel for the time signature, and then it ended up becoming the sort of theme. But yeah, so I don't know who won that one. Both of us, maybe. Both all three of us.
Everyone's a winner when it comes to trivia, right?
Yeah. Like, we're all a bunch of absolute winners.
Yeah. Okay, so ratings and reviews. I think I know what I'm going to go for. But Andy, do you want to go first?
Yeah, go on then. It's tough to call. I think the influence of it is undeniable. Watching it in comparison to some others, it's not one I could watch as regularly as some of the others. I noticed as we were watching, actually, it's really heavily like backloaded. No, Michael doesn't actually kill any people apart from when he was a kid. Like the adult murders don't start until 50 minutes into the movie of like a 90-minute film.
Yeah,
like it's really heading on. But the cinematography and the music's fantastic as well. So as much as I couldn't watch it very as regularly or have maybe as much fun as some other arguably less quality slasher movies.
Any you can name right now? Any slashers come to mind?
Slashers come to mind. Like, I do love Friday the 13th. I was very surprised this doesn't feature on the list at all.
Yeah, none of them. Not even part six.
Yeah, not even Manhattan.
Yeah.
Other than that, an unusual one I found a couple of years ago. Sleepaway Camp is incredible. It's awful,
yeah.
But it's, you know, the creativity of the murders. There's some bees. There's a nice twist to the end. And if you haven't seen Sleepaway Camp, don't Google it. Just watch it, and then send us a live reaction.
Okay, I've heard a similar thing for one called Pieces as well. I've seen the artworks of just the guy holding a chainsaw and there's like loads of limbs around.
Have you guys played Until Dawn as well?
No,
I have not. Yeah, I'd really, really, really like to. In the interest of closing a point, though, I'm still going to give it a. I'm still going to give it a B.
Okay. Yeah. What about you, Ben?
Yeah. I'm kind of similar to Andy. I kind of feel like I enjoyed it for what it was, but at the same time, it doesn't compare to other sort of slashers for me. And it because obviously we've seen so many iterations of the slasher film and so many ridiculous levels, like the next step up and what can be, you know. Freddy versus Jason, Jason X when he's in space and shit. This kind of felt like, it felt like the ready salted flavor slasher film, didn't it? It felt like the plain digestive biscuit. But yeah. It's John Carpenter, I love it. But I probably would go a little bit less than Andy for this one, just in terms of how much I'd like to rewatch it. So I'll probably just go for a C+ on this.
C for controversial. I was going to go for a B as well for the exact same points, really. But I do feel like some of the cinematography is from the slashes I've seen, I feel like this is one of the most competent ones, like one of the most well put together films. And it's good. It's a classic. It's I know some people watch this every year for like Halloween, and I think that's kind of wasting your time.
I know it didn't go that way, but I really got watching it today. You know, when they started planning these, like Halloween 2 follows directly on from the end of this one. And then Halloween 3 is the completely random one with the masks and the three years of Halloween. Yeah. But I know these were originally meant to be like Cloverfield movies, right? Episodic and not necessarily connected.
I think that's what they decided with number three, right?
And then they realized if you look at this one, imagine this film as just a standalone episodic thing that was never going to be followed up. Obviously, with its success, a sequel was generated, but you can really see if the intent was there to make this like an episodic standalone thing, it actually worked really well.
Every Halloween, you have a different, like a Black Mirror style self-contained story.
I think, I'm not sure if that was the plan after they did number two or whether that was the original plan, but for me, watching it, knowing that that was at some point a plan, I think that that sort of carries over quite clearly, that like, oh, you're planning this as like, you know, like when you have like an Outer Limits or a Twilight Zone where you can leave something on a bit of a hanger, like, oh, what happens? Well, we're never going to tell you, but that's how it is.
I guess, but then people saw this, and this film obviously did as well as it did, so like, we can't mess with that formula too much because it made $47 million $47 million. I mean, I'm not a big Halloween person, but seeing the trailer for the new one, which I guess takes the like doesn't take Halloween 2 into account, and it's just another straight sequel, right? I think it just kind of washes the slate clean.
Is it from the very beginning again? Like, because he's old.
It follows,
it's old Laurie, isn't it?
Yeah, it follows this first one that we watched this week. And I think it takes account of any of the others at all. But yeah, I'm kind of excited about that. It should be good.
Yeah, I like the. I saw, you know, one of those YouTube videos you get with like the circles and the big arrows. They pointed out some like attention to detail, and he has where he gets knitting needled and it punctures the mask. They showed in the new one there's a little hole in it, so that's
also
pretty cool.
Also, Laurie's got the scar down her arm where she gets slashed.
So a lot of attention to detail. I mean, I don't know how the rubber in that mask hadn't perished over all this time, but we can.
Wow.
Cool. Okay. Next week, we're doing number four on the list. I think Andy joined us for that as well, right?
Yeah. Is it The Thing?
It is The Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be back.
Another John Carpenter.
John Carpenter, double bill.
Yeah, yeah. I actually watched it fairly recently, but I'm looking forward to watching it again. It is a pretty good classic.
Yeah, yeah, love that one.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Also, just one last thing. Did you guys watch the new Predator trailer?
Yes.
Yeah, I haven't seen the new one yet.
I wasn't sure from the first trailer, but this trailer, I'm all in.
Yeah, I know it's get a bit of hate because it looks kind of like schlocky 80s sort of horror, but like, that's exactly what I want from a Predator film. I don't like anything else. Yeah,
I think I'll go and watch it in a second, actually.
Yeah, it's a proper Red Band trailer where we get like proper action and everything like I'm expecting in the film.
Yeah,
none of this like AVP movies that were like a 12A. It's a proper brutal looking Predator movie. It looks great.
Yeah, cool. So this show is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com and grab a free book. I've got a patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovac Kalman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, give us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and remember to hit subscribe. Thanks to my regular co-host Ben for being a real horror dude. But also thanks to Andy for coming on the show once again.
Thanks, Luke.
Thank you. So I'll send the biscuit in the post and we'll be back next week.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.